Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on NABAClub.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too, I must have this thing. I'm delighted to introduce Elaine R. from 8111. I can't wait to hear how you got sober and how you stay sober.
Hi, I'm Elaine. I'm an alcoholic. I haven't told my story in a while, so this has been an interesting day to kind of collect my thoughts about where I've come from. I've got 13 years sobriety, and I remember that very first meeting I went into, and I had that, as I was told later, I had that deer in the headlight look when I was there. I think what, you know, all my life, I grew up in a family of alcoholics. Both my parents were alcoholics. And it was a very, much like anything else, it was a very dysfunctional place to grow up. A lot of things happened that should not have happened to anybody. And when I was 16 years old, I was on my own. And I started drinking and using drugs when I was 12, just to cope. And 16, I was on my own. I was basically homeless. I was living on the streets in New York City. And there was really no, I didn't have any hope. There was nothing for me to hang on to. I was fortunate enough that there were people put in my life that helped me through those difficult days and times that I went through. But I managed to, I had a very, very good friend who helped me, and he died about 2 years after I met him. He had cancer. And I remember him talking to me about God. And I was not into the whole God thing at that point. And I remember him talking to me about it, and that was his wish for me, that I would find God. So I, you know, when someone's dying and you're sitting with them, you know, you kind of agree to pretty much anything at that point. So I told him that I would, and, you know, then I went on my way. And I did what, you know, any alcoholic or addict would do, and so that's what I did. And I did, you know, end up, you know, I had moments in my life where I kind of got myself together for a little while. Not that I wasn't using alcohol, but I just kind of held it together long enough to get something. And I made it through college, and settled into a career of restaurant management, which is great for drinking. And and so I did that for 10 years, and I ended up here in Georgia simply because I was running away. I didn't have anywhere to go. I pretty much burnt all my bridges, and I didn't know what else to do. And I had a family member who lived down here, and I thought, well, maybe if I just, you know, got down here, kind of got my stuff together, and then I could go out to the West Coast, because that was where I really wanted to go. that was 14 years ago, and I'm still here. But after about a year and a half living here, I ended up getting a position in a company, and it was an entry-level position, but it was great, and I ended up working with for a really great VP. And he noticed pretty quickly that I had a problem. And he was really, he would start talking to me about it, not really, you know, overtly, but he would just mention things to me. And I remember him one day telling me that there was a place that I could go. It was right near my house, and that he would meet me there. I didn't really quite at that point put two and two together that he was, you know, had the same issue that I had. But I ended up one Sunday afternoon at a meeting with my deer in the headlight look, and just was didn't really know what to do, but I did what people told me to do. You know, I started going to a meeting every day, and it was probably my third or fourth meeting, and I was at a women's meeting, and nothing against, you know, the ladies, but man, those were the most uncomfortable meetings for me ever. And so I remember sitting in this meeting, and I was sitting in the front row just because I got there late and they didn't have any seats left in the back. And I had my head down, and literally someone came up and talked to me, and I'm just thinking, just stop. I don't want to talk to you, you know. And she said to me, so you're just sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I thought, wow, yeah, that's exactly how I felt. And so I kind of, you know, perked up after that, and we talked a little bit. I remember her giving me her phone number, and I remember talking to her from time to time. And probably I was scared to death of her, truly. I was scared to death of her. And I remember that phone call that I had to make with that heavy 900-pound phone to ask her to be my sponsor, because I knew I needed something. I needed someone, you know, to help me. And so I called her, and she was like, well, what took you so long? Because, you know, it took forever for me to call her. And so she, you know, she taught me, you know, she had a lot of rules that I was supposed to follow. And a lot of them I thought were kind of crazy. But over time, I've realized the value to doing those things. I realized the value of bringing my book to a meeting. I realized the value of sitting on the front row. I realized the value of doing service for others, making the coffee, straighten the chairs, cleaning up after a meeting. All those things that when you're doing them, you think there it's, you know, everyone's staring at you because you think it's all about you. But but you also think that, you know, like, how is this going to help me? And but it did. It did. It really did help me. And I remember, you know, so I was reading the book, and I remember, so I had to call her every day at a specific time. And I remember the one time I called her, I was a few minutes late, and I got the, I'll talk to you tomorrow, on time, and she hung up the phone. I was like, wow, you know. And but it's funny how, you know, I learned again, you know, respecting others' time, and that it was important to, if I said I'm going to call at 5 o'clock, that you guess what, I called at 5 o'clock. And if I wasn't going to call at 5 o'clock, then I needed to tell her before 5 and not at 4:59 that I wasn't going to be able to make the call. So those little rules that she gave me, those things that I went by, have helped me throughout my entire sobriety, not just in AA, but in just the world in general. So she was really about the big book, and I am so incredibly thankful for that, because that is where the answer is. You know, I would love, you know, I wasn't the type of person to, I wasn't good at school, I didn't study well, I didn't get things right away, but she broke it down in language that I could understand, and she helped me to really understand what the big book was saying, and that knowledge has been invaluable to me over time. I remember when she brought up the whole God thing, and you know, I had you know, the way that I grew up. I mean, I grew up Catholic, and but there was a lot of things that went on that were not right, and so I, you know, I knew when I was 6 that I hated God. I mean, that was just clear as day. But it was, you know, she asked me if I would just be willing to believe that there was something bigger than me. She said, and you can call it anything you want. She said, but are you willing? And I said, well, yeah, I guess there's something bigger than me. So so that's how we kind of got through, started getting through the whole thing with God, and that there was a power greater than me. And I remember when she took me through the steps, and it was hard. I mean, I remember sitting in her house, writing all these questions out and answering them, and I literally, like, every time, I felt like I was at school, you know, but that she wasn't there watching me write, so I could kind of goof off a little bit, but then all of a sudden she'd, like, peek around the corner, and I'd be like, oh, I'm supposed to be doing this, okay. So, but we went through the steps, and, you know, making the amends was probably the most rewarding experience for me, because, you know, it wasn't, I remember my friend who brought me in, who invited me to my first meeting, I remember him telling me that, you know, it's not just about saying you're sorry. It's about changing your actions. And I remember that to this day, because it's so critical to know that your actions, I mean, when they say actions speak louder than words, they do. And it wasn't just the words, I'm sorry. It was, what did I do, and what can I do to make up what I did? There are things that, you know, that right now, they're just living amends. They're just things that I'm never going to be able to make up, but I just try to live a better life every single day. And some days I make it, and some days I don't. But as long as I don't pick up a drink about it, that's cool. since that time, I've sponsored quite a few women, and it's been such a pleasure to just watch them grow, watch them change, watch them kind of get their life back. And I, for many years, I did a big book study at 8111, and that was probably one of the most rewarding things, just because I was so blessed to have the ability to do that, from the standpoint of, because I had the knowledge, because my sponsor taught me about the big book, I was able to use that and help other women as well. And through that, I've developed some really lifelong friendships with people. I have, you know, I have people who've moved away who we still keep in contact with and kind of chat with from time to time. I've, over the last, probably last 7 or 8 years, I've gone through a lot of changes in my life. I moved away. It wasn't really that far, but far enough for me to say I can't get to, you know, for a while, probably about my 5th or 6th year of sobriety, I moved from Roswell to Woodstock, which in reality is really not that far, but to me it was like the other side of the world. So for a while, I did do the whole, well, I can't come back over there because it's too far to drive, until someone pointed out, like, well, you would have driven anywhere if you needed to get alcohol. I'm like, okay, yeah, you got a point there. But so you know, I learned to find other meetings by me, and I also learned to go back and visit the place where I got sober, because that really holds a lot of good memories for me. And over the last few years, I've changed jobs. I've gotten increasing responsibilities where I'm at work, and I've also started to do different things. So, one of the things that I've done is now I do triathlons now. So years ago, I would have never thought I wanted to do a triathlon, but there was no way. I was so out of shape, and but I was able to. I've been able to do quite a few, and that's been exciting for me, because not only that, but I do it for an organization that I raise money for charity. So that gives me a lot of hope. But what that does is it also brings me to closer to a lot of people who are struggling today. Whether it be they're struggling with, you know, if they're struggling with alcohol, you know, it just brings me to a different group of people that I can be of service to. And, you know, one thing that I was taught early on was about serving and making sure that I was serving, that I always had other people foremost in my mind, that it wasn't, again, all about me. I think over the years I've tried to convey what I've tried to, you know, what one of the biggest things that I've learned over time is really just to listen. There's a lot of times when I remember early on in my sobriety when I would be talking to somebody new and I would find myself doing more of the talking. And I find now that if I just sit quietly and let them talk and every once in a while interject, you find out more about the person, you find out more about what's really going on with them, and it really makes things, it makes people like when you listen to them, you know. Now there's points, because I remember I would ramble on with my sponsor and she'd be like, okay, enough. That was just how she was. So, but at the same time, it enabled me to be able to listen to other people and to understand that everyone has a story. Everyone got here a certain way. And their story, I think one of the most, when I think I was listening to the promises being read and what they give you, and I was thinking, wow, yeah, I've got that. And that is so cool, because I never thought about it that way. When it says that we recover from a hopeless state of mind and body in the big book. And that was my life. I was hopeless. And there wasn't anything that was going to change that short of God. And so I, you know, but it was something that I resisted for so long, because I didn't know what to expect, and I was so scared to let somebody in to my little world. Because at least my little world, I knew my little world. It might not have been the best world, but it was mine. And I knew it like the back of my hand. So I remember being so scared, even when I had, you know, my sponsor, that my first sponsor, it was... We would have points in time where it was really hard for me to talk to her because I didn't want to let her in, and she would know that. And she would poke a little bit, and then she'd let me kind of sit in it for a little while till I got uncomfortable enough that I was going to tell her. And that's what I did. So I think that with her, that she, you know, she really just showed me how to live, how to love others selflessly without any, she taught me about how to, just how, you know, it really, I think when I think about the big book and I think about what it does, it just gives me a lot. It gives me tools for living. It allows me to you know, if I have a problem, I know that the solution's there. And the funny thing about the big book is that you can read it a million times and you're always going to find something new. Like all of a sudden they put something new in there. It's like, wow, when did that get there? So it's amazing though that every time that happens, but it does, you know, and as I've had, you know, as I've had a little bit more time, I've been able to find myself, you know, more in that book, how I was, and I can relate more to the stories and what happened, and I can, you know, one of the heart, what I think, you know, with the amends part of it, it's hard. And I think the hardest part, the hardest people I had to make amends to, other than was mostly my family for the most part, because you know it was really difficult. I couldn't look at what they did, because it doesn't matter what they did. All that mattered was what I did. And so I had to really pray on those and ask for help on that one, because you know, it's easy to gloss it over and you know, just say you're sorry and go on your way like everything's okay, but that's not what the amends is about. It's about really looking at your part in it, accepting the blame for what happened, and then moving on and agreeing to live and living a better life from there on out. Recently, I've had an experience with a good friend of mine who has gone in and out, in and out, in and out. And she's back in again, so that's awesome. But you know, it worries me, because I see, you know, it only takes a little while, and I start to see the same old behaviors. And you know, but I had to let that one go. I had to let her go. We're still friends, but I had to kind of say, you know what, I'm gonna put you over here for right now, because I can't continue to watch you spiral downhill, you know, because she's not willing to listen. And that's okay, because when she's willing, someone will be, I'll be there, or someone else will be there for her that she needs. I think finding a sponsor is probably the one thing for me. I remember my friend who one of my birthdays, early birthdays, he had said to me, he says, "This is a good thing you found her," he said, "because she's the only one who wouldn't take your crap." And and I laughed, and I was like, "Yeah, you're right, she doesn't." But she, you know, I think finding a sponsor, as hard as it was to ask for her to be my sponsor, it was really one of the most rewarding things that I could have done. And you know, through the years, I've found that you have to have that person in your life who's going to guide and direct you, because you don't, you know, left to my own devices, I'm going to do my own thing. And so if I don't have that guidance of someone telling, you know, helping me make, you know, whatever the decisions are that I need to make, at least weighing things out, helping me weigh things out so I know what decision to make, it helps. Because life, as you go on, as you guys all know, gets more and more complicated. And just because you've stopped drinking doesn't mean that life isn't any more complicated than it is. So I think, you know, some of the other thing is, you know, I stay close to the literature. I stay close to the steps. I do my best to help others as needed. And I think I just try to stay as connected as I can. My life has become incredibly busy, which is a good thing, but it's also a stressful thing. This weekend I spent it with 13 sixth and seventh grade girls. That was an interesting experience. I don't have children, but I was helping a friend out, so it was an interesting experience. And had it not been for this program, I probably wouldn't have known half the time when to just keep my mouth shut and let them do what they were going to do, and other times of when to say something to them and when to kind of guide them. And part of the whole thing is guiding them and, you know, guiding them. I think one of the other valuable things I learned about sponsorship is it's not about somebody telling me what to do. Yes, in the very beginning, my sponsor absolutely told me what to do. You will be here at this time. You will do this. She did, absolutely. But after a while, when I was further further away from a drink, and I was doing what I was supposed to do, and I was following what I was supposed to do, and she saw that I was growing. She was more, I guess I look at a sponsor as more like a coach. You know, I can't tell anybody what to do. I can give you the best guidance I can give you. But it's kind of like my trainer. You know, she can help me as much as I'm willing for her to help me. And it's the same thing with the sponsor. A sponsor can help you as much as you're willing to let them help you. And it's not about them, or it's not about, you know, it's about what are you willing to do to change your life. And for the longest time when I was growing up, I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any grand idea. I had a lot of grand ideas. They were not the smartest or the best ideas in the world, but I had a lot of ideas, and I did a lot of things, and I made a lot of mistakes. But fortunately, I, through all those mistakes and through all that stuff, I've been able to come through the other side, and I've been able to see things through a better lens at this point. I think I just I've got a lot of people in my life today to be thankful for. Not necessarily because they were always the kindest or nicest to me, but because through their actions, through my actions and how they responded to me, I learned something from them. And now when I'm faced with a difficult situation, I really just try to look at what can I learn from this situation? What can I learn from them? What good morsel can I take from them? Because everybody is put there for one reason or the other. We all show up and we're here. And we're all here for a particular reason. So we all have something to offer each other. And I think over the last couple years, I've really learned that more and more. I've gotten involved in different charities, different things that can help, that allow me to do a lot of great things. But at the core of it, I do it because I know that what I'm doing is helping somebody else. And, you know, I think about it when I go biking and it's 20 degrees out and we're all sitting there going, why are we out here biking? And we're freezing to death, but we know the reason we're doing it. We're not doing it for any other reason, but we know that it's helping somebody else. So, and I've met so many great people along the way, through doing that. So many people that have had the same challenges I have had with addiction. And it kind of makes it, you know, for someone who didn't really think I had any purpose in life, who didn't think that I mattered, who didn't think that anyone really cared about me, you know, I learned today that there are people who care about you, and there are people who love you. You know, I remember someone saying early on in the program that, you know, we'll love you till you can love yourself. And I always thought that was the corniest thing that someone would say. But it's true. it's true, because that's what we do. You know, we can't. We can't solve every problem you have. We can't prevent the consequences from coming, because you know what? When everything you do, there's going to be a consequence. Good or bad, there's going to be a consequence for it. So we can't prevent the bad consequences from coming your way, but we can help you through all those times, all those consequences, all those things that we do. And, you know, there were so many nights where I was just so grateful that, you know, my clubhouse was still open. And every holiday when they had round-the-clock meetings, it was like, great, because now I have somewhere to go. Because early on, I mean, nobody wanted. I mean, I only had one family member down here. And she sure as heck didn't want me around. So, and who could blame her? I mean, I couldn't blame her for that. I mean, I wasn't the best sister in the world either. So, you know, those times when the clubhouse was open and I could go, you know, and I would remember I'd be there for hours, you know. All of a sudden, I'd look outside and it would be dark out. And and I think, you know, some of my other, you know, the rewarding experiences that I've had through years have always been when I've been able to work with somebody else. I mean, the way my sponsor took me through the book and through everything, I mean, we were sponsoring pretty quickly. And I would sit there going half time alone, like, what do I have to offer anybody? Like, I just got here 9 months ago. What do I have to give to anybody? And, you know, she taught me that I had the book, I had the knowledge, and I could do it. And that is what we're supposed to do. And that's what they talk about in the big book is giving it back to somebody else. So that's what I've learned to do. And honestly, I probably don't do as much of that today as I'd like to. The great thing about being sober and getting, not necessarily getting my life back, but getting a new life, has been is you get busy. There's a lot going on. You know, I work a lot of hours a week, which is great, but also time consuming. And I do a lot of things, and those are always a lot of good excuses that I can use to not work with somebody else. But the truth of the matter is that the most rewarding work that I can do on any given day of the week is to work with another alcoholic who's suffering, who has challenges. So that's what I do. Some of my people that I still sponsor and who have moved away, we still talk on a weekly basis. We still go over what's going on in their lives. We still talk about the big book and what's going on. Now, we do it remote. We do it on the phone. We do it through Skype now, which is great because then I can actually see them and know that they're not pulling my leg on anything. But you know, I'm able to continue those relationships and know that they're still keeping up in touch with AA wherever they went. I'm also able to you know, where I work, I actually work in an area that's kind of close to a bad section of town. But it's great because you get to meet some really great people out there. And you know, one thing that I was scared of when I came in, but was thankful that I didn't find, was that I just, you know, one of the things is I just wanted people to be real with me. Now, being real has a good thing and a bad thing. So being real means they're going to be real with you whether you're doing something good or you're not. They're going to be real with you. And I was so thankful that so many people were put in my life that were just straight up with me. And it allowed me at the same time to be straight up with other people. So I could call them on their stuff, but not from a feeling of I'm better than you, but from the feeling like, hey man, I did that too, so I know what you're doing, so stop, you know. That's why I felt this week when with the sixth and seventh graders. But yeah, so I've looked back on periods of my life now and I can see the growth and the change and what's happened, and I also see, you know, that, well, where do I want to go next? What do I want to do next? And for someone who was hopeless, I mean, I attempted suicide on a number of occasions. Thank God I never succeeded. And it took me a long time to be able to say, thank God I never did that. That didn't really happen. Because there were a large portion of my life where I didn't want to live. And I literally would wake up every day and I would curse God. And I would pray in the evening that I wouldn't wake up the next day. And I did everything I could to make that happen. And no matter how hard I tried, something miraculously would still keep me alive. And, you know, I think about it that he kept me alive long enough that he could put somebody in my life who could help me. I will be forever grateful for my friend who brought me into the rooms. He is one of the most fabulous people you ever want to meet in your life. And it's amazing to me because he had such a gentle way of getting to the point of what was going on with me. And he wasn't mean, he wasn't accusatory, nothing. He's really the nicest guy you're ever going to meet in your life. And he just celebrated a lot of years. I don't remember now, but it was 20, upper 20s. And to see him pick up his chip, I could just think back to that day that I went into that room and seeing that sea of faces and wondering, what the heck am I doing here? And am I going to stay? And I remember him, I remember leaving that room that day, and I remember going out to the front, and there was a little porch thing, I think, at the time on the front. And he said, "So are you going to come back?" And I said, "I think so, yeah." You know, but I didn't want to really commit because, you know. But it was hard because I worked for him, so I kind of had to do something, you know. But I didn't really know at that point, you know, what to do. But the fact that I just kept coming back, because the reality was I did not have any other option. I didn't know what else to do. But I knew for a fact if I continued down that path, I knew where it was going to end up. I knew. And so today I'm just thankful beyond belief that I'm actually alive. I'm here. And I'm able to share my story with you and with others. And I'm able to be a productive member of life today. Reality is that for many years I was not a productive member of life. But today I am, and I strive every day to follow what I've learned in the big book, to follow the principles, to follow the guide that Bill Wilson laid out for us in that book to show us how to live one day at a time. And I had a friend today, I was complaining about something, I don't know, it was not a day goes by that I don't complain about something, but I was complaining about something, and she said to me, and she responded back to my text, and she said, "You know, you tell me every day just to live one day at a time." I was like, "Oh, don't throw my words in my face, but thank you so much for throwing those words in my face, because it's true. It is all about living one day at a time, about living what we can, do what we can today. And tomorrow's not a guarantee, but today we've got." And thank you so much for listening to me and helping me, letting me share my story. Thanks.
First I slept and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me and finally waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly sometimes slow. We get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart that beats for me. Takes me where the promises are in. For something that set me free, and I'd arrive to a world in harmony. Below there's a vision that one day. Take me.